Welcome to episode 175 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on April 24, 2020. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss the topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In this episode, Ben and Scott discuss Azure file shares for client devices, domain controllers, Azure AD networking, and other cloud services and how they all fit together.
The thunder is never done. All the tornadoes rolling through. It was nasty last night.
You know what? I did not hear a thing. I may or may not have been up until like 2:30 the night before working on stuff. And then I crawled in bed at like 12:30 last night. I was so tired. I passed out. And I woke up when one of my kids came in her bedroom at some time, 4 a.m. And my wife was like, did the thunder wake them up? It's like, was it thundering? I never heard a thing.
Man, Corona times have not been kind to my sleep schedule. It's turned into like, you know, let's watch a movie, and then the movie's over, and it's maybe it was like just one TV show, or let me read this book for a little while, or whatever it happens to be. So I think last night I was up until last night was late when it was 3 a.m. Hence my coffee brewing slowly this morning. So I heard that whole storm roll through and the whole thing. When I was sitting in my kitchen, it was awesome coming through. It was a good one. I like a good storm.
So I woke up and I was actually bummed it didn't wake me up, because I'm the same way. I love a good thunderstorm, especially at night. For whatever reason, those night thunderstorms when the lightning lights up the whole house and the thunder just rolls, it's cathartic. For some strange reason.
What?
As long as there's not a tornado blowing my house down.
Yeah, well, there is that whole thing. But it was definitely a good thunder and lightning storm. And, you know, it was tornadoes and stuff further to the north, but not so much for us. So it was just a good rain event.
Yes, I will say, not growing up in Jacksonville, I have been impressed with the geographic surrounding of Jacksonville and how it seems to deter most storms from hitting us. Like, we never really seem to get tornadoes or really bad storms from the west because of the river and because we're sitting just down low enough. I think the Gulf of Mexico messes up a lot of them. And then the way Jacksonville's kind of set in on the coast, if you're going up the Florida coast and up into Georgia and South Carolina, it seems to deter any hurricanes from really having a direct hit on Jacksonville.
Yes, it is the furthest point west on the East Coast. Like, when you think about that dip in, so it's not just Florida to Georgia and all that. Like, pull out a map and look all the way up. It is the furthest point west from Maine all the way down to us.
What about the Keys? Don't the Keys loop back into the west?
They do, but they're sitting actually like...
They're just sitting in the middle of the ocean.
They are, right? But they're all the way down at that eastern tip of Florida. Is, you know, think about like going down to Miami and you're pretty much a straight line down to the Keys from there.
Yep.
So they are still further east than we are. But as a chain of islands, they stretch pretty far over. But at that point, they're underwater anyway.
Got it.
So as a landmass with two big bodies of water, like you talked about, between the ocean and the river, being a pretty substantial river, at least nice and wide, you know, it's good enough to pick up a lot of the weather that comes through here.
I remember that growing up in Michigan too. I mean, Lake Michigan is significantly bigger than the river, but Michigan was spared at least a lot of the bad thunderstorms and tornadoes and all of that because of Lake Michigan. They would hit Wisconsin, the lake would break it all up before it hit Michigan. I went and spent a week in Wisconsin. It was like tornadoes every day. Don't go to Wisconsin.
Don't go to...
Sorry to anybody that's from Wisconsin that's listening. I much prefer Michigan to Wisconsin.
You're going to start a fight or something.
Probably. I have some good stories about Wisconsin and Michigan, but we don't need to talk about those today.
As IT professionals in the cloud era, sometimes it feels like we don't speak the same language as the rest of the organization. So when stakeholders from finance or other departments start asking about a specific project or team's Azure costs, they don't always realize how much work is involved in obtaining that information, sifting through cluttered CSVs and a complex mess of metadata in order to manually create custom views and reports. It's a real headache.
On top of helping you understand and reduce your organization's overall Azure spend, ShareGate Overcast lets you group resources into meaningful cost hubs and map them to real-world business scenarios. This way, you can track costs in the way that makes most sense with your corporate structure, whether it's by product, business unit, team, or otherwise. It's a flexible, intuitive, and business-friendly way of tracking Azure infrastructure costs, and it's only available in ShareGate Overcast. Find out more on ShareGate.com/ITPro. Should we talk about what I was staying up late playing with today?
Yeah, it sounds like you were staying up late doing things that I was not. Well, I was watching, you know, crappy movies and contributing to Netflix viewing hours. You were doing real work, supposedly.
Well, so supposedly, because it all started with a client question, which led to me playing with this with my own domain in Azure tenants, because I don't want to break anything. So to set this up, Azure Files has been able to do SMB for a while. You can use the like storage account name and the private key to actually map a network drive to Azure Files, all of this. They have recently, and I think it's still, certain aspects of this are still in preview.
Yes, they are.
They rolled out the ability to do Azure Files over SMB, leveraging either Active Directory or Active Directory domain services to authenticate users to the file shares rather than using a storage name and a key, so that all of those NTFS type permissions can be used or supported through a mapped Azure file share. But there are a ton of restrictions and requirements and prerequisites around doing that, which could lead to the question that we were actually debating before we started recording of, should you actually do this? And if you do this, what all do you need to think about? Because this has led me down a massive rabbit hole of VNets and DNS and AD and ADDS and all of that.
Yes. And you're leveraging preview services, which is even, well, preview functionality, I guess, which makes it even more interesting. So when you initially came and you had asked me the question of, okay, I'm trying to stand up a file share and I'm doing the domain authentication thing and it's really a pain. And in the back of my head, I'm thinking, isn't that relatively new and probably in preview? And, you know, my first question back would be, well, why do the preview functionality, right? Especially if it's for a customer. Like typically we don't want to take customers into preview stuff, even if it's public preview, because if we just consider Azure Lifecycle, there's no guarantee that a preview service ever actually goes GA'd. So obviously Azure Files is GA'd and all that kind of stuff, and it's sitting there ready to go. But Microsoft could look at this feature where they're doing SMB file shares with AD, with Azure AD rather, and with on-prem AD, and they could say like, I don't want to do on-prem AD anymore. I'm only going to do AD because that's an easier scenario to support.
Well, but it's not just AAD. It's AADDS. It doesn't support AAD.
Yeah.
Remember? We got to clarify these two.
I get my storage confused because there actually are parts of storage like blobs and containers which do support Azure Active Directory for role-based access controls and things. So you can totally do AAD authentication of that. Anybody who thinks Azure Storage isn't a confusing service, being that it's a storage account, but it's not just a storage, it's blobs, it's files, it's tables, it's queues, it's disks.
Right, it's got like subservices.
You know, it's static websites. It's like 10 other different things. It's amazing.
Azure Files are going to be like the Teams of Office 365, where everything's just going to get sucked into the storage vortex.
Well, if you think about it, storage is kind of important, right? In the grand scheme of things and the overall fabric, because what is Azure? It's a bunch of hosts who are running hypervisors. And it's a bunch of file servers that are pulling configuration off of storage controllers and things like that. right? So right. At the end of the day, storage is what makes
storage
the,
is important.
It makes the world go round.
Which is digressing. So this whole storage authentication thing, I'm not going to say it's just Azure ADDS. Should I go through the prerequisites and what I found? And then we can keep talking through this scenario?
Sure. Just to lay out the scenario, what you're trying to do is you're trying to stand up a file share in Azure is available to clients, not to other servers that exist out there.
Yes, but, we're not going to a server.
But to individual clients, and you require per user authentication from each of those clients to the file share, right?
Right. Okay. So scenario being, client does not want to use SharePoint or OneDrive because they don't want to deal with the whole sync thing and files on demand thing and having to access the browser and maybe not being able to sync all their files based on hard drive sizes and all that. They like traditional file shares on premises, but they want to be in the cloud and they want to be able to work from anywhere. So said client wants to be able to go to Starbucks or go home or be in the office and be able to map to their network drive the same way they would if they're on premises. And this is a, they're not a huge client, so they actually don't have a current VPN to get to their on-premises server from off-premises. They can't VPN into their office. Internet connection is okay, but it's not like a large enterprise network that has Cisco, has VPN, has all of that stood up. So they were like, well, what if we just move everything to the cloud and we can map this network drive from anywhere using our traditional AD usernames for securing all of this across all of our users?
I always love when customers come up with their technical solution, right? Like they have a business problem they're trying to solve. The technology that solves that problem really shouldn't matter as long as it aligns to the business outcome. So what is the process, the workflow, or the outcome that we're trying to solve? And then you can backfill technology around that. They're going backwards. They're coming to you with the technology and saying, hey, make this work. And then...
Yes, because I spent some time with them. We looked at SharePoint for maybe 6 or 7 months. And ultimately, the decision was we don't want to use SharePoint. We want to use Azure Files. So I was tasked with figuring out, can this be possible? Does this work? Especially given some of these new features combined with preview. So for this all to work, you do still require Azure AD. But it also requires either an on-premises AD server or Azure Active Directory DS or domain services. So you have to have one of those two synced with your Azure AD and have your users synced in both places. And then you can go configure this file share for either Active Directory authentication or Azure Active Directory DS authentication, but it's still also using Azure AD in the background.
Correct.
And the problem we started running into, well, the first problem we ran into is SMB 3.0, which Azure File uses, goes over port 445.
It does.
Almost every ISP blocks port 445.
They do. True story.
So, first problem was, okay, we need VPN for it, which we can talk about that more later. And then we got VPN set up. We started testing this, and there's a bunch of prerequisites. Your machines either have to be hybrid Azure AD joined, or they have to be AD joined. But once you get all this set up and configured, when you go to authenticate to map your network drive, your computer, even though it's using Azure AD synced with AD domain services or AD, it like reaches out, but then it's like, oh, I also still have to use domain services or Azure AD. So it requires access to both Azure AD using your UPN and Azure AD, but then it like takes a side route and goes and has to ping your domain server or your Azure Active Directory domain services server to actually do the verification to your for your map network drive, which means that if you're at home or if you're somewhere not in your local network or anywhere for that matter, you have to be able to properly authenticate against either a domain controller or Azure AD domain services wherever you are, which means it has to either go over that same VPN that you can use to bypass the port 445 rule, or it just has to be a publicly available domain controller, which we all know is a bad idea.
Yeah, almost kind of like gives you the sense that as you talk through it and the requirements, that while it works with clients like Mac and Windows, like it works with Windows 10 and generic SMB mounts and totally doable with Mac and things like that, it's almost like not meant to be used that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back to that shoehorning functionality.
Yes, exactly. But what fun would life be if I didn't try to shoehorn in some functionality that wasn't meant to be using preview features?
Oh, boy.
I like to live life on the edge.
Yes, it's a fun world you live in. So you have a number of problems or technical blockers that you need to solve along the way there. You need to configure identity in the cloud. So some type of probably replication and resiliency on the domain side of things.
Because the first question there is, do you do a server running Active Directory in the cloud and replicate, or do you use Azure AD DS? You need something in the cloud.
Yes. So there's that piece, and that's certainly its own can of worms and decision matrix right there. And then you also need a VPN, as you said. So where does that VPN endpoint live? And how are your clients going to connect to that VPN? I'd imagine maybe one of the first inclinations is you might think in your back of your head, well, I have clients. Let me connect the clients through point-to-site VPNs and just hook them straight up to the gateway. There's some limitations to point-to-site VPNs depending on the size of your customer. There are limits to the number of connections that you can have going in at any given time, which could be a limiting factor for you there. And then once you're into the VPN, there's all the routing and network security and other things that need to come into play for that client to not only talk to the DC itself, but to be able to get back to Azure files and do all that fun stuff.
Yes. I think you covered the biggest ones that I've encountered so far.
those would be most of them. So let's break some of it down, because I think it's an interesting conversation just based on some of the paths you went down and some of the things that potentially broke. And we could probably talk through why they broke or why they work that way. And maybe we'll leave like the whole decision about should you attach clients to Azure files up in the air.
So first problem was domain controller. Do I go the Azure AD DS route, or do I put another server up in Azure that's just a server 2016? I think Server 2019 is out there. Stand it up as another domain controller and do domain replication from on-premises to the cloud.
Yep. Well, I might ask myself another question first. So is your customer going to have more than 128 connections at any given time? Like, are there more than 128 clients that need to connect to this file share?
And that would be a no. We're like, this is like 10 or 12,
all right,
10 or 12 users connecting occasionally, because most of the time they're in the office, which also brought up that Azure File Sync could come into this at some point in time. They want to be able to connect to the cloud as their backup option.
Gotcha.
If they're not in the office.
Okay.
Something like when this whole last month happened and all of a sudden nobody can get to their file shares unless they're in the office because they have no VPN.
Gotcha. All right. So that makes more sense. That's all good. Once we get through this whole thing, I might spin it on you and ask you why you didn't go another way with it. Because I'm coming up with some other ideas as we talk through it.
Well, see, that's good because I could use some. I always like more ideas.
All right.
So connections, we aren't a problem.
So we need a VPN, and we know we're going to be under the limits for point-to-site VPNs and standing all that up. So we're good there. So we know we're going to need a VNet, and we're at least going to need a VPN to connect to. And now, like you said, we need to figure out what domain or directory service are we going to leverage. Are we going to leverage Azure Active Directory domain services, which is ADDS, but it's a projection of your Azure AD into a pair of managed domain controllers? So DCs that you don't RDP into, but you do have access to hook up with things like you know, Aduck and all your tooling that you use today to manage Active Directory. So that's one path you can go down. So don't pay for servers, but pay for the service and the projection and the resiliency and SLA and everything that comes with that, or stand up your own and manage your own.
Yep. Which, standing up and managing your own is definitely cheaper. I think I looked at Azure ADDS and I think it starts around $140 a month. It's a set fixed price because obviously this isn't a service that you can spin up and spin down. It's just always running. So it starts at $140 and goes up from there based on, I can't even remember, I think it was based on number of users, and there's some functionality that's included in different levels. But it's not cheap considering you can stand up a whole server for like $50 or $60, and AD is not a process intensive service on a Windows server, but you are left with managing a Windows server and you don't necessarily have HA.
Well, you do have HA, so they are redundant pairs.
Well, not if you in ADS, not if you spin up your own server.
Not if you spin up your own. All right, yeah. So if you do ADDS, it is a redundant pair, but if you do your own server, then it's on you to figure all that out. And then come up with your resiliency model. Are you going to use single instance VMs with premium disk to get some type of SLA, at least at the VM level? Are you going to do availability sets? Are you going to do zones? What does that look like? And how many do you actually need?
Yep, exactly. And then you're doing all your own patching and server management, mm-hmm. and if the server crashes and all that.
You're living in IaaS land, for sure.
Yep. So I asked about... And then I was talking to you a little bit the other day and I said, okay, so what does that migration path look like? Let's say I have AD on-prem. I want to go all cloud only. So I'm doing AD on-prem hybrid with Azure AD to sync all my users up. But now I'm getting rid of all my on-prem servers. So maybe I just want to go Azure ADDS and deprovision my on-prem AD. Is that a migration path, or what does that look like to go cloud only with Azure AD and Azure AD DS, and then deprovision that hybrid Azure AD Connect service and my on-prem AD server?
Yeah, so it doesn't eliminate the VPN problem and having to connect to the DCs, because you still have that client authentication issue to get over.
Right, and you still need your VPN for your port 445.
Yep.
Going into another topic. So there's no way to get around this VPN issue.
You do. So all that stuff stays. Really what you've done is you've shifted your, at that point, you've shifted your DCs from on-prem to Azure just inside of IaaS, but you've still got the hookups and the connectivity and all the other things that come in. So I'd be worried about a couple things in there in general by saying my DCs are only going to live on the cloud. Since you said your users are theoretically in normal times in the office the majority of the time, I would want them talking to the most network close authentication service that they could. And then, you know, maybe if they were going into something like Windows Virtual Desktop or something like that up in Azure, then okay, there's your kind of file share and you're all set and ready to go. And you've got your DCs up in Azure. But if you really wanted to get rid of them, you would do AD Connect. So you would do your hybrid identity and do all your projections from on-prem to AD. And you could configure ADDS at any point in here, because that's just a projection from your Azure AD. And then once all your identities are there and all the things that you need to do, because all AD Connect is going to do is synchronize users, groups, and kind of some limited, in the grand scheme of things, metadata up. It's not synchronizing your computers that are joined to the domain. So that's a whole nother issue that you'd have to solve. But you could take AD Connect, and then, you know, once everything's up there, users and groups, just rip AD Connect down, get everything, all the synchronization going to the new domain, rejoin all the computers to the new domain that lives up in Azure, because they've got to get back in there, right? You're probably still going to want to manage them with GPOs and things like that. So all that gets in place, and then stand down the on-prem DCs. I think one of the issues there is ADDS was not a real replica of your on-prem domain. So it's not all the same FISMA roles and everything else. If you don't catch everything, there's potential that you leave something behind. you'd almost want, like, if this is really for backup, maybe a redundant pair of read-only DCs or something like that up in Azure that are ready to go that somebody could hook up to through that VPN on a point-to-site perspective, and they'd authenticate to the most network-close DC. Or if they were on-prem, they'd still be able to authenticate to the one that's there. Best of both worlds, maybe.
Yeah. So it's not really a migration from AD to ADDS. It's more of a, let's go have all three of them running, and then let's just remove one and make sure that you manually copied, rebuilt, did everything in Azure ADDS that you had on your in your on-prem DS server.
Yep. You've just got to be very cognizant of the limitations of ADDS. As a projection from Azure AD, it's not the same exact type of thing. So yes, it lets you join computers and servers to the main. Yes, it has GPOs, but it doesn't have all the functionality that you're going to get in your on-prem AD. And especially when I think about client management, you're probably doing GPOs that rely on things like ADMX templates. Maybe you're managing Office client installs, or I'm sorry, Microsoft 365 apps for enterprise. It could be because you haven't moved.
I just wanted to say that. I was trying to figure out how to get you to say that this episode.
Yeah, I had to say it twice this week in a presentation, and it feels really dirty. Like, what? Just Office Pro Plus people.
That's a mouthful.
It is. But you still have management that you need to do there. So then do you look downstream of saying, well, do I move over to cloud policy or some other type of service, which, you know, right.
You
probably should.
Right.
Right. There's all these options out there, but all you wanted was a file share. And now all of a sudden you have this technical implementation and the spread of things that operationally is turning into a little bit of a nightmare. Who's going to maintain all this stuff and keep it patched and up to date and ready to go and write all the guides for what do we do when the VPN's down and everything else that comes along the way.
Yep.
So that's kind of ADDS. I think when you weigh the two out in a lot of scenarios, ADDS has a place. It's quite often the path of least resistance. When I think about like friction and time to implementation, to just stand up new DCs. As you said, they're often cheaper to run. They can run on lower cost hardware and lower cost VM sizes. You might want to upsize them while you're kind of configuring everything the first time and then scale them down a little bit later once everything's up and running. But it tends to be a known path where ADDS can still have some pain points, especially if you haven't worked with it before and you haven't really taken the time to dig through all the documentation and the FAQs and things like that.
Yeah, I feel like going through all of this as I was digging around with it and playing with it, ADDS serves a purpose a lot more when you're going to keep all your existing on-prem domain controllers. And Azure ADDS is simply a way to extend your Active Directory to the cloud in order to do just LDAP authentication against a cloud service without standing up another VM in the cloud.
Yep.
That seems to be what I'm seeing.
I've actually used it. I've seen it used in some creative ways. And I had a customer that we ended up going down the ADDS path for just based on how they were set up. So they were a customer who had a number of disconnected domains on-prem that didn't have trusts or anything like that in place. So they couldn't stand up AD Connect once and have everything routing through from all these domains, user at Contoso, user at Fabricam, all those kinds of things into AD at the same time. But relying on some of that functionality that you have where you can do the disconnected domain sync now, and you can bring all those disparate domains for those M&A scenarios into Azure AD. What they were able to do was they were able to take six different disparate domains and user namespaces, you know, all those user UPNs, get them all syncing into Azure AD, which was something they didn't have access to. They couldn't put them all in the same resource domain or user domain or things on-prem. And then they were running a lot of their shared services in Azure. So every server that they stood up in Azure was joined to that ADDS instance. It wasn't joined back to company one's AD or company two's AD or company three's. And that way, if I was a user from company one or company three or company five, I could log into the servers in Azure to do operations and management and run my applications. And I was able to authenticate through and do all the things that I needed to do because servers still need classic auth, you know, Kerberos and TLM and all that good stuff. There are use cases for it. I think you just need to understand what your use cases are. If you're just looking at ADDS and saying, all right, this is going to be a rip and replace replacement for my existing domain services, quite often, I don't think that's exactly the case today. Give it time and it'll probably get there. It's just not there today.
And we don't currently know when it'll get there because it has been a slow deployment. Or rollout.
It has some quirks to it. I've seen ADDS deployments where you go and you stand it up the first time and you go to do your sync. And it doesn't matter if you have 5 users in your Azure AD or you have 25,000. You'll just hit the sync button and you might come back 48 hours later and it hasn't started syncing yet. And then you go, oh, what do I do? How do I fix that? The answer is you don't. You call support and hang on the phone.
And wait.
A long time.
Interesting.
Yeah. All right. So you go down that path and I think you weigh the two out. You probably look at DCs.
Yep. And that's kind of, as I've played with it and looked at it, and as we talked about it the other day, and even based on what I'd seen, you have pretty much convinced me that if we go down this route, that is the way to go in this particular case. Which led to question two, but based on time, we should probably do question two next time. Or should we keep going and have a really long episode?
Let's keep going. It's Corona times.
Okay. Yeah, nobody's listening. Nobody's driving anywhere to listen to the podcast. Our numbers have actually dropped. It's kind of interesting. And I've seen that, side tangent, kind of across the board. I'm in a few different podcast groups and all of that. And people are saying, overall, podcast numbers seem to have declined because nobody's commuting anymore. And that's when everybody listened to podcasts.
Yeah, I'm finding as a rabid podcast listener, I mean, I subscribe to a lot of podcasts and listen to a lot of things. I'm just falling behind. It's the drain of the times that catches up with you. So where I might have gone and been done with work and just tried to decompress for 30 minutes, now it's turned into kids are at home, everybody's at home, things are going on, and all of a sudden there's that other Zoom invite for a happy hour, and you haven't talked to people in weeks because you're quarantined, and you're like, I got to get or you're self-isolating or whatever it is. You just have all these other competing things going on.
Yeah.
And I am falling behind on all sorts of things, which I intend to listen to at some point. It's just going to take me a while to get there.
Yep.
Outlook add-ins are a great way to improve productivity and save time in the workplace, and Sperry Software has all the add-ins you'll ever need. The Save as PDF add-in is a bestseller and is great for project backups, legal discovery, and more. This add-in saves the email and attachments as PDF files. It's easy to download, easy to install, and Sperry Software's unparalleled customer service is always ready to help. Download a free trial at sperrysoftware.com, SperrySoftware.com, and see for yourself how great Save as PDF is. Listeners can get 20% off their order today by entering the code CLOUDIT. That's CLOUDIT, CLOUDIT, all one word at checkout. Sperry Software, work in email, not on email.
Okay, so after that side topic, after that brief commercial on podcast listenership, tidbit of random information. So let's just say, for argument's sake, we have decided we're going to put our DC in the cloud. Azure, it's a server. We're doing IaaS. We're going to stand up a brand new domain controller up there. Now I have all my machines that are still on-prem. And I am going to, again, for argument's sake, because we want to shift to this whole cloud-only model, we are going to eventually, we'll replicate AD for now, but eventually that on-premises domain controller is going to get depreciated, removed. So our only domain controller is going to be in the cloud. But I still want to be able to join machines to it. I still need to authenticate against it for something like Azure File Shares in the scenario we talked about. Now I have a whole nother set of problems or challenges, I won't call them problems, challenges or things to think about, because I have to be able to connect to it to go into my computer, my settings, join domain, and then actually reach out to that domain controller, especially in the case, which my own tenant is in this case, where I wanted my domain to sync up to Azure AD properly. So my UPN suffix is intellijink.com, which is also my website, which also has public DNS records. So DNS resolution can be a little challenging because I need intellijink.com to resolve to my internal domain controllers, as well as to my external domain controllers if I want to hit my website and all of that, going over this VPN connection to hit my DC.
Yes.
Did that make sense?
It does. Basically, if you want to be able to authenticate to the DC, you have to be hooked up to the network. And that means you need all the routing and name resolution and other things in place.
Yes. So I am partway through that. I think I might have it figured out, but we had to record a podcast, so I'll go back to it today. But essentially, same type of thing. I'm using the same VPN gateway because I needed that VPN gateway anyways for my Azure file shares over SMB. And what I was struggling with last night was to get all of my DNS settings set up properly so I could join a Windows 10 machine that's running as a VM on my laptop, connected over VPN to join this domain controller sitting up in Azure, and leverage the DNS in Azure so that I actually hit that instead of going out and trying to hit my public website when I tried to join the domain. So my DC up there has, and to top this all off, don't ask the story behind this, I have two virtual networks that I have peered in Azure AD, and my domain controller sits in one virtual network, and my VPN gateway sits in another virtual network. So I'm connecting to VPN, connecting to the virtual network in Azure, going over the peering connection between one virtual network to the other virtual network in order to hit my domain controller sitting in said network.
Yep, so you got a hub spoke.
Because I like to make things complicated.
You're trying to make your 12-person entity the largest enterprise in the world.
Well, this is just my personal. This is a one-person entity. This is me right now.
You and all the voices in your head that told you this would be a good idea to go down this path. Yeah, some interesting things start to happen along the way there, I think, as you discovered, particularly with name resolution. When you have a VNet in Azure, there's kind of three DNS models that you can go with. You can do Azure provided DNS, which gives you resolution within the VNet itself. So I stand up VM1 and VM2, and I can ping VM1 and VM2, and they'll resolve by name and all those kinds of things. I can do NS lookups and see them, and you know, I can actually pull their private IPs, and I'm all good. Sometimes you don't want to do that, and you want to do bring your own DNS. So you do BYO DNS. And you take your VNet and you set your VNet settings to say, no, this is my DNS server. That way, when clients query the VNet for DNS, it's going to point them back to your domain controller. And you go like, oh, why are we doing this at VNet level? Because remember, that's where all your network configuration is driven from. You really don't make changes to the NICs on VMs in Azure. You make changes to the configuration of the virtual NIC outside, and then that's projected down to your virtual machine, or your virtual machine gets its configuration from there. So you've got to have that resolution end to end. So peering is kind of interesting because you've also got peering with a VPN gateway. So you need to allow gateway transit on one end, but not the other end. And you need to make sure that your potential routing and things are in place. You might need UDRs at some point, depending on how else you want to shift traffic around in there. You get all that up and running. I bet your primary VNet, you were going in and saying like, oh, this is great. I'm going to set it to my custom DNS. And if you stood up VM1 next to DC1, they would totally resolve and they do what they need to do. But you introduced that VNet peer, which then makes resolution a little bit weirder because your client, so you're hooked up on that point-to-site VPN or site-to-site, whatever you're using.
Yep.
So your client now, where is it pulling its DNS from? It's pulling its DNS from the same VNet as the VPN gateway, which most of us, I think, would just leave in Azure-provided DNS by default because it's just a hub, right? It's sitting there doing what it needs to do. Let it do
right.
it.
Which is what I did.
Yep. you know, you might see the VM on the other side, but it's going to resolve as the internal name with the cloudapp.net and all that, and not as the proper NetBIOS name that you're going to need to join the to join the network. So probably some more configuration to do, where now you take the peered network, and the peered network, or the hub rather, it also needs to have its DNS configuration updated so that it pulls its DNS from the DC over in the spoke.
Yeah. And that was the hint that we found for anybody that finds themselves in a wonky scenario such as myself. I was going out and pinging it, and I was like, well, when I do an NS lookup and I'm looking for my domain controller, it's coming back with this internal.cloudapp.net, not my domain. And you were like, I bet your DNS is wonky in that VNet that you have your gateway in. And lo and behold, it was.
Yep. So that's one option, is go down that path. The other option is, you know, if you're just doing this for POC, you can't use a host file because of the whole SRV record thing, the serve records, but you can use an LM host file to go ahead and point to your DCs. It's a pain in the proverbial rear end to set it up, but you can do it. I think the other thing to think about is identity is really a core service. It's typically, maybe when you just look at kind of your topological design and you're thinking about how to approach that with your customer, your identity, your firewall, your logging and management, those are all core services, right? Or shared services. They're not really application or kind of segment specific. So something like your DC may not actually be living in a spoke in your final configuration. It might be closer in the hub anyway, which will make things a little bit easier.
Yes. In theory, had I done this properly and I didn't already have some of these VNets configured and I was paying attention to what I was doing at 2 a.m. the other night, I would have just put my gateway in the same VNet with my domain controller instead of in a separate one. And at this point in time now, it's just, can I actually do this? Realistically, I should probably just go delete my gateway and go stand it up in my other VNet and save myself some hours. But again, I get into this and I look at this as learning and figuring this out and how does this all work together and can I get it to work? Not necessarily is this the way I should do it.
Absolutely. I'm not saying you shouldn't try things out.
Yes, but I wholeheartedly agree with you.
I just want to make sure we have the conversation in case somebody actually does end up listening to this and they go, oh, those people are going down some crazy path, or somebody looks at it and they're like, hey, they sound like they know what they're talking about. Maybe I should go do that. And I always like to talk about the other ways you can do it too.
Don't do it the way I did it unless you have a very specific reason other than it was 2 a.m. and I created my gateway in the wrong subnet and I wanted to experiment with this.
All right. So DC up, client connects and VPNs there. Theoretically, you can just hook up to files now.
Theoretically, I think. Oh, so Azure Files now gets really weird. Should I talk about Azure Files and the security there?
Absolutely.
So as they rolled all this out now, we can connect. We're going to assume that you can. So first thing you should do with Azure Files is once you get all of this figured out, go connect with the storage account and the key to make sure you can actually connect, that your routing is going properly. Because at this point in time, assuming you're connected to VPN, you have your network set up right, download the VPN client to, this is another thing. There's a VPN client that does an executable that goes sets up the whole network and the routing and everything on your Windows 10 machines. Don't touch that until your network is all configured, because what that executable is doing is downloading a configuration file, making a bunch of changes. If you change your network, your VPN client doesn't get that change. And you actually have to just disconnect, remove that VPN connection, go download it again, go set it up again, and get all those network changes. So we're going to assume all of that took place. I can connect with a storage account name and key, but now I want to connect using my username instead of that storage account and key, so I can leverage all the normal NTFS file permissions and permission folders in this Azure File Share differently and all of that stuff. So first, the machine you do all this from has to be domain joined, and there's some certain PowerShell scripts you have to go run to actually set up your file share in Azure to be able to authenticate against AD. And those do have to be run from a domain controller. So you go run those scripts, Now your Azure files are set to authenticate with an AD server. And there are a couple levels of permissions that you need to set. And the documentation does walk through all this. But you have to set the RBAC permissions on the file share itself. There are three permissions in RBAC for SMB specifically. An SMB, I think it's an SMB file reader, an SMB file contributor, and an SMB, it's like, it's not advanced contributor, it's something else, but it's another level up from contributor. So the first thing you have to do is go in, set these RBAC permissions. This is going to look against Azure AD for these RBAC permissions, which is why you have to have everything synchronized together. Mm-hmm. That does not give you access to the file shares. That just gives you that RBAC permission to leverage the Azure service. Now you can go mount it again with that primary key and your storage account name, and then right-click in Windows and go into the properties and security, and then start setting the security on the shares and the folders and the files, looking back against your domain controller. So there's both of those permissions that have to be set. And then once all of that is done, assuming whatever client you're connecting to can connect to both Azure AD and to your domain controller, you can go in, do a typical net use, point it to the Azure file share. You can do a /U and throw in your UPN from Azure AD, or you can just do the net use and it'll prompt you for a username and password, type all that in, and in theory, you have a mapped network drive that's using your typical permissions coming from a domain controller.
Mm-hmm. In theory.
In theory. Again, taking all those prerequisites and everything we just talked about, being configured perfectly for that to even work.
Yes. Yes.
And there you have it. Yeah. And there was something else I had to do, and I'd have to dig through it, but I did also have to create a private endpoint for my Azure files. And I can't remember at what point in time I hit that and why I had to do that.
Why would you want...
Why? Because it's a private endpoint that points to a private IP for my...
Yeah.
Maybe I didn't need this. This may have been one of my testings when I was trying to play with everything. I don't think I actually need this.
So I don't think you would off the top of my head. You could connect across the public endpoint and do things that way. The private endpoint would arguably be more secure for you, especially because you're VPNing in. That way you're VPNing in, and when they go to connect to the file share, they're actually connecting through the private endpoint. And they're routing straight into the storage service. And even though the public FQDN is still there, nobody can connect to it that way. They can only come through the private endpoint.
I think this was when all of my testing was going on to try to figure out how all these configurations worked. I think I created this. And yeah, as we're talking about it, looking at it, I don't think I actually need it anymore.
Hey, look, you simplified things while making it...
I simplified things. I got rid of a private endpoint connected to a storage account. But yes, that, in theory, would all work. And that would provide you a way to actually be anywhere. As long as you connected to the VPN first, you could go mount these file shares as a user instead of using that primary storage key. And then one thing this client had talked about is they're like, well, when I'm on premises, then can I speed up my connection? Because now inevitably you're going over the internet, you're connecting to a file share. And if you're pulling 100 meg, 200 meg files back and forth over a VPN connection to an Azure file share, it's not going to be nearly as quick.
Especially a point to site connection.
Yes, especially point to site connection. It's not going to be nearly as quick as if you're just pulling it off your local server. So then they were like, well, can we do like the Azure File Sync so we can have a cached copy locally in the office and use this as kind of a backup emergency option if we want to get to those files from externally. And also, if you're doing Azure File Sync, it does give you some of that DR type scenario where our office catches fire, we lose our server. And now we have this backup option. We have all of our files up in Azure Files where we can get to them, restore them, do all of that if the need arises.
Mm-hmm. It would be there, and it would all be very nifty. Lots of moving parts.
Yes, that is the biggest thing I took away from this. This is not. I mean, I come from the Office 365 side. This is not stand up an Azure or a SharePoint site and do a sync. There's a lot of moving parts, a lot of routing, a lot of networking. There's a lot of stuff to figure out and take into consideration if you want to go this route. So you said you had one other thing too that you were going to throw out there is, why didn't you just do this? What is your thoughts on this whole configuration setup other than SharePoint's a lot easier?
SharePoint would have been easier. You should have just convinced them to go that way. And, you know, if SharePoint wasn't their thing, there's lots of other file storage services out there. Like, I don't know, Box or Dropbox or pick one of those.
ShareFile
Yeah. If files is your thing and per user authentication is your thing and you want it to be resilient and live in the cloud, here you go. There's the right tool for the right job.
Right. We had an episode a while back about that, about picking the right tools, specifically when it comes to cloud storage.
Yeah. So I think one of the other things to maybe think about is you're doing this as a one-off scenario, and you're doing it for the time when those users need to be away from the office and kind of have that remote connectivity through. I think another thing to think about would be, what if you didn't have the VPN and you didn't have that whole client setup piece? And maybe you didn't do Azure Files. You just went with a traditional set of DCs and a replicated file share that lived in the cloud. So say you did like DFSR or something like that over a site-to-site VPN connection from the office.
Yep.
Have your clients, rather than coming across a VPN and dealing with that headache, maybe just stand up like Windows Virtual Desktop or RDS services and something like that, and have them connect to that service when they need to. So, okay, you need to go to the cloud, you're remote, here's your desktop in the cloud. It can talk to all the things that you need to talk to without all those routing issues and everything else that you've kind of run into along the way with ports and protocols, because then it's just a 443 connection and anybody can do that. And you'd have more control over sizing, latency, performance. I think you'd have some better client controls there because you'd already have the DCs in Azure. You'd still have AED, but it might let you even move away from Azure Files, which you might not need in this scenario, and just have, like you said, like a regular file share running up there. And maybe make it a little bit better. Like if that customer runs that file share on their DC, say, hey, we're going to Azure, we can make it better, but you really don't need a PaaS service. Like we can live in IaaS and it's a known quantity.
What if you just did Windows Virtual Desktop? So same thing you're talking about, Windows Virtual Desktop, DC sitting in Azure. Again, now you're not dealing with VPN, you're not dealing with network because you're all sitting on the internal Azure network. And you just did Azure File Shares with Windows Virtual Desktop and a DC in Azure, because like you said, now you're not dealing with port 445. Everything is in the same VNet. You don't have any routing issues. You can join your Windows Virtual Desktop to your domain. Azure File Shares should work significantly easier. And you could also go that route. You're not going to have the latency either, because again, you're going over all the internal networks at this point in time.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on how you're going to use it, right? Do you need that per user authentication? It's probably the biggest thing in there.
Yep.
And just based on the path you're going down with per user authentication and the way it is today being a preview, you know, like but back to that life cycle thing, it might be easier to go with known quantity and say, this is going to be supported and ready to go. Especially, I'd imagine you're looking at something like this for a customer because of the time that we're in. They're coming up with some specific needs based on what's going on today. And we don't know how long what's going on today is going to go on. And sometimes that roadmap for Azure Files is a little murky. So, so you might have some other options in there that potentially simplify things or maybe give you some other cost levers or controls.
Yep. And we did start going down that path, or at least having some of those initial conversations about maybe you do leverage Windows Virtual Desktop for everything, because at that point in time, now every computer in the office is essentially just a thin client. It's a terminal, can even be an iPad with those nifty new keyboards and mice that are hopefully coming today via UPS. And your office computer can just be pretty much anything at this point in time because you're just connecting to Windows Virtual Desktop and doing everything in the cloud.
I think it depends on how you look at it. I was maybe thinking of it more as your file share scenario where it's a backup.
Yep.
So maybe you have a limited size host pool, but because it lives in Azure, it can scale when it needs to. So it's not a problem that it's only ever got maybe one available desktop host sitting there because it's going to be able to scale from 1 to 12 on demand as users are coming in and out versus having 12 or however many you need running all the time. And then it truly is that backup scenario.
Yeah. And that's kind of one of those key differentiators is I think this might start as a backup and then turn into maybe this is our everyday functionality or everyday scenario. We'll just kind of have to see where this goes, but it has been a very interesting exercise on my part to figure all this out.
It's always fun to play with new stuff. Welcome to Azure.
Yes, thanks. I've actually been doing a little bit more Azure stuff. I have a couple other projects that are tied all into Azure IaaS. It's bringing me back to my roots as a system admin and dealing with servers and racks, only some of it's a little bit more abstract now.
It's all just in a JSON file someplace.
Yes, I did not have like these predefined Azure DNS things before to figure out and crazy VPN routes and VNet peerings. And
yeah, but now that you've done it,
can and can't work over a peer.
You'll never forget.
That's the theory. That's the hope, the plan, all of that. All right. Well, thanks for this extended episode.
Yeah, no, thank you. It was fun.
It was. And we have lots more stuff that we can talk about. We actually had like 3 or 4 topics today. So we've got lots more fun stuff coming in the future. So go enjoy your cloudy day while you sit inside in social isolation. Don't work too hard. Go take a walk on the beach. Have you gone out there yet? Have you gone out and taken a walk on the beach?
I have not gone to the beach yet. It's been a week. We're going out on the boat this weekend, so that's the plan.
Nice. That sounds nice and relaxing.
Yep. All right, man. Well, until next week.
All right. Enjoy.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.